Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
My superiors would have me solve this murder by rounding up 10 Bajorans at random and executing them. I'm hoping you'll give me a better alternative. Now, these Bajorans won't talk to us, but they seem to trust you. I understand you used to sort out petty disputes concerning food, blankets, everyday sorts of things. They come to you?
I suppose I'm considered a neutral observer.
Of course. You're not one of them. And for that, you should be thankful.
No, did we start?
Now we've started.
Hey, you guys, did we start?
Hey, you guys.
Oh, wait, I have to remember we dealt with this. Hey, Jesse, remember last week? Oh, this was a whole thing.
I don't even care this week. I don't give a shit about nothing.
Dan made a big deal about this last week, and he was right to. So I'm going to do this properly.
Well, you can do it whenever you want. You just got to do it. You can do it.
Desperately trying to do that right now. So,
okay.
Well, let's do the thing.
Okay.
And then everyone will be happy.
I don't even care this week.
What's the thing this? Oh, I forgot.
Okay.
I don't care anymore.
The thing was is that last week we apparently...
Ask me if I care.
We apparently started the podcast in a non-standard fashion.
Nobody...
And the problem was is that Dan had planned a thing, a gag.
Okay.
It's not based off of our regular pattern.
Yeah, so
we went off of the regular pattern, so his gag got ruined.
And it wasn't.
And it sucked because it was a good gag.
And the thing was is I wouldn't even go so far as to say I planned it because we had done this thing in such like consistency that you didn't really have to plan for it. It was just sort of implied at that point.
I still think it counts as being planned. As in other words, you had a reasonable expectation.
Right. Okay. Fair enough.
We went off pattern.
But
and as a result, it fouled up your little gag.
But if you'll recall, the part that, like, how it got, the pattern got all fucked up, like, where, like, you didn't say the thing in the way you usually say it. Like, what I said last week, words I used was, that was surmountable. But the problem was, is that after you said it, then everyone just started going like, whoopity boobity boobity, like, and nobody paused.
Good point.
The bigger issue.
And then there was that whole thing, was that last week or the prior week when Jesse kept saying, murder.
I think that was the week before.
That was probably
the week before.
Yeah.
And then Jesse.
It wasn't in the beginning. It was
Jesse
like
continued that riff last week. He didn't say murder, but he was doing more.
Okay. Like,
well, that's the kind of shit I do, motherfucker.
Okay. We'll see.
That's just what you do. I guess that's just what he does.
We'll see what happens.
What am I to do if that's what he does?
We'll see what happens.
What am I to do?
We'll see what happens this week. But the only way we can see what happens is by commencing.
Commencement, begin.
We begin. So, with that prelude aside,
yes,
I would like to welcome...
Henceforth.
Welcome. I would like to welcome the audience. Welcome to episode 293 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Quark, at your service.
There we go.
See, wasn't that funny?
It was great.
I liked it.
Wasn't that funny?
That was a good gag.
That was a good one.
It was one of those ones that's so sophisticated, I won't get it until I listen back later.
Yeah, well,
you don't get it.
What's not to get? At your service.
I'm not gonna get it until later, I guess.
You know, well, it's like, welcome to the podcast. We're at your service. That's what's to get.
Oh, I thought it was Quark. Never mind.
Yeah, that's what it says. Quark, at your service.
Quark.
It's like, at your service. You know, part of the thing about playing the sounds is you want to, like, balance between something that is bespoke to the conversation at hand, but you also want to make it fit the entire quote. You don't want to cut the quote up too much. So sometimes you'll have things that will include part of, like, the episode, like their names or something like that, because that makes it seem like it's
more... Do
you
have an example?
That makes it seem like it's more part of the episode.
Of course
I think I see what you're getting at.
Of course I have an example.
Yeah, so of course was an example of
well,
a contextual response. So that, right. that works as in place of host dialogue.
Right.
Gotcha.
Right. But then there's also sometimes it'll include
sort
like
some representative clips.
Sometimes it'll like include people's name in it, like the Quark at your service. I'm sure I have another one around here somewhere. But I can't seem to find it
it's
at
rare.
The moment because I was not expecting to have to look for such a thing.
It's right. rare.
But if I find an example of it, I will point it out when I play it because I know in here somewhere I have an example of a contextual statement that also includes somebody's name in the episode. See, you got to be flexible with this kind of thing, man. You can't expect me to get like perfectly fit. Part of the fun is it fits, but it also reminds you of the episode at the same time. You want both.
I mean, I really don't think that happens that frequently with your bits.
Yeah, like, well, this was really Jesse in response to Patrick saying, I don't even understand how this could have anything to do with what we were talking about when I played
Quark at your service.
He was like, I don't understand how that could possibly have anything to do with welcoming someone to the podcast. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Doesn't make any sense to me.
I'm enjoying your impersonation of me. It sounds very much like Chris Farley for some reason. But we should move along home and get into the meat of the discussion,
the meat
proper, because this is a podcast on the topic of
we have to get to it eventually.
The episode, which we haven't even mentioned yet.
No, we haven't.
Not okay.
That's also part of the
But here's the because. There's the also and the because. And the
because.
Are there any witnesses?
It's an additional because. Because there's many
because
of the wonderful things he does.
But because necessary evil, which is
the reason for this exercise
right,
is beyond my comprehension.
Oh, okay. Well, so, that was an interesting one because the first part you're like, oh, that's responding to what I said because I said necessary evil and you said
the reason for this exercise
would answer because the exercise in this case is us doing the podcast.
Right.
But then it has the extra bit.
Yeah, it's layered.
Yeah, okay. It's layered and complex.
It's very layered.
Just
it's
like
very
you,
complex.
Man.
This is an advanced podcast.
Doubly so.
I'd say so. I'd say triply.
Triply
no,
so.
But
triply
because,
so.
Because Necessary Evil, the episode we are discussing this week.
Yes.
From Deep Space Nine's
yes.
second season.
Yes.
The eighth episode of the second season, and that appeared.
It was a long time ago.
Yes, that's true. I would say about 1994-ish.
Yeah, it's over.
I barely saw it.
30 years.
And Necessary Evil is one of my favorite all-time Deep Space Nine episodes.
I can
see
imagine
why.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So Jesse
cancel
and
each other out.
What's the lady? Mrs. Vatrick. Do we know her?
Paulra. Yes.
Vatrick, Paulra.
Right,
no, it's Paulra Vatrick. Paulra Vatrick. Unless you go by the...
Yeah, but isn't that Bajoran
it's
usually...
Vatrick,
is it custom to do the last name first?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't care.
All right. But yeah, I just wanted to get that out of the way up front. I don't know what you all think, but from the time it aired, I remember watching this on old-fashioned...
November 15th, 1993?
Television. Oh, 93. So yes, because the first season was sort of
That's
a
super
shorter
fucking
season.
Old.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. So Necessary Evil is a longtime favorite of mine.
Mm-hmm.
I love this story. We'll get into
all
the bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just want to get that out of the way at the beginning so people will have some context for the conversation.
Thank you.
But
otherwise, they don't know what we're talking about. rambling on about are they talking about Star Trek now? Are they talking about Pulp Fiction?
or Spaceballs.
Spaceballs.
And we could be talking about Spaceballs since it was announced earlier in the week that Spaceballs 2 is coming out with Mel Brooks.
Certainly.
Yes, Mel Brooks and all the not dead people appear to be coming back, including Tim Russ. Tim Russ seems like he's coming back to find some more
shit. Mel Brooks is like 99 years old.
98, 99, yeah, I think he's
in your minds.
You know what's funny about that? Because he says, in your minds, mm-hmm. but I made it sound like...
In your minds.
In your minds.
Oh, they call it a mind.
Yes, minds. Like, like delving into the minds versus delving into your mind.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Delving into something.
But before we get too far ahead of ourselves, just a heads up that we will have not a second break fun-em-up, but rather a second break suggest-em-up.
Oh. I'm not going to play your game.
Yeah, it's not.
I think
a,
you are.
It's not a game. It's a suggest 'em up. That's why I named it something different to differentiate it. There's no element of gameplay to it really. It's more a list of potential suggestions that are relevant to
that
this episode.
Might be helpful.
It may be helpful for some people, honestly. Quite
some people are very suggestible.
Okay, well.
No.
It's probably a different topic of conversation.
It's a different podcast altogether.
Okay. So.
Okay.
Necessary evil. We will begin this conversation. And we'd
be at it all night.
Well, we may be. We'll see how it goes. But we'll begin this conversation and see where it flutters off to. But we should begin just by calling out the obvious, which is that this is a straight up film noir.
Yes. And it was, there were a lot of examples of that. Like, for example, it began with the whole thing, which I could relate to, where Odo is complaining about how it's like, Commander Sisko wants me to like keep this bullshit log. That reminded me of times at like various jobs I've had where suddenly there's some like
directive
from the top being like, well, now every day you have to start doing this thing. And it's like, why? Yeah. But like, so I could feel with him, like I felt his pain on that one, but also it like was an excuse to make it like more film noir, like with the narrative and stuff like that. And the
there
way
was like
was...
a storm at the beginning.
Yes.
It starts out with a storm and then there's like, you know, like
femme fatale
widow chick, like
femme fatale, and mysterious murder.
And and lines like at one point during the security log, Oda goes, the Ferengi holds onto life like it's gold pressed latinum.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, so much of the dialogue. Like, yeah. So yeah, femme fatale, stormy weather, mysterious murder, shady investigator narrating the tale. And by the way, the use of the logs as a mechanism for getting in a narration, because not all film noirs have narration, but a lot of them do.
A lot of them do.
It was so clever to use the, even though it's sitting right there, it's obvious, but it's not, you know, it's a clever way to be like, we want to do a film noir, we need a narration, we need Odo, the shady investigator, by the way, the shady investigator that you have to have in a film noir. All the characters are gray, pretty much everyone involved in this. The story involves past events influencing current events.
I think that was just the way it looked back when the Cardassians controlled it, right? It was all like foggy and...
Yeah, well, that too, but that definitely added into it. But
foggy looking.
The transitions are also very noirish. There were a lot of like James L. Conway directed this episode, obviously a very famous and prolific Star Trek director. But one of the transitions that stands out to me the most as being straight out of like a film noir style movie was when Quark is all laughing in the past, and then it transitions into the bar patrons laughing in the present.
Or is it that one?
Yes, well, except as it goes on, it transitions.
There's another one. I think it's that one.
Yeah, it might be that one.
I think it's that one. Because there was that weird scene where, like, out of nowhere, Quark and Dukat start laughing at Odo.
Yes.
It was Odo goes, or Dukat goes. And then Quark goes,
right, that was weird.
It was like really weird. It was like, and Odo was just like, aw.
This is fucked up.
Speaking of Dukat, real quick.
These guys are working together.
Mini side quest. You were asking me to provide an example of a sound that fits in the conversation, but also takes from the episode itself.
Okay.
Like kind of like the Quark at your service one. Someone say, Dan, I need something. Someone say that.
Hey, Jesse, that's on you.
Dan, I need something.
Just what is it you need, Gul Dukat?
See? It's answering your question, right. But it's also saying Gul Dukat.
It says, yeah, I
so,
see.
So, you know, and so that, I see. So that makes the quote more whole because it relates to the episode. But you can intuit that the Gul Dukat part is meaning Jesse in this instance. That's all. That was my example.
I think it's a great
example.
I think
that sounds cool.
We appreciate that.
Gul Dukat's pretty cool.
Jesse and I appreciate that. Now, I hope you don't take offense, Dan.
Oh, no.
Because
you're gonna make me take offense?
No, I don't want you to take offense.
You say that, it means I'm going to have to.
No, honestly, it's not even an offense. I don't think you'd be offended by this. You may take umbrage, but I don't think so.
Umbrage.
But you may. I could understand why you might take
your feathers ruffled.
Because when thinking about the examples of how this is, they don't even like try to pretend. It's not like hints of noir. James L. Conway was like, we're doing a noir film. We're doing a short noir story using all the elements. And one of those elements that you already hinted at is the quick patter. There's a lot of that.
Oh, right.
But the main example is right at that in that beginning scene with Quark and Paula Valtrex.
Paula F. Tompkins?
Yes. Valtrex?
Valtrex. Is that wait, that's drug. Those are boner
isn't
drugs.
Valtrex,
no, that's isn't, a boner drug.
No, I think no, Valtrex like I think is a herpes medication.
Oh.
So, Paula Valtrex and Quark in the stormy weather,
Valtrex.
Right? Oh yes, Valtrex.
Oh, at the very beginning?
Very beginning. And the reason why I hope you don't take umbrage is because I made my own audio clip.
Oh, I guess it. I guess
sometimes
it'll,
he does
I,
that.
I guess it'll. I guess I'll have to let it slide. I think that's gonna be okay.
Okay, so the.
I think I'll let it pass this time. I think I'll let it pass this time.
For the audience, Jesse and I have known Dan for I don't know decades now. What he's just done is an indicator that he's very upset with me. I'll be hearing about this later.
Oh, no. Don't bother.
Okay, so here is just a little clip of an example of that noirish, typically noirish dialogue.
Would you like more ice?
I'm fine.
You were always very kind.
Was I?
Yeah, that part.
You made life a little easier.
I ran a black market for anyone who could pay. Never exactly thought of myself as kind.
There was always that little extra ginger tea in that package you gave me, wasn't there?
You didn't call me to Bejor to talk about tea.
What's up with this fucking tea?
Yeah.
That part, is it like really good or
everyone
something?
Everyone loves the ginger. First, it must be.
You didn't call me to Bejor to talk about tea. You didn't call me to Bejor to talk about tea.
I'm hoping you'll give me a better alternative.
Yeah.
I'm hoping you'll give me a better alternative. I'm hoping
you didn't call me to Bejor to talk about tea.
I'm hoping
you didn't call me to Bejor to talk about tea.
I'm hoping
you didn't call me to Bejor to talk about tea.
Ginger's for chicken, it's not for tea.
What was
there,
the
deal? I said it.
Whoa, dude.
Whoa, Jesse.
Chill out, man.
I mean, you know, you're gonna get us canceled here.
I was afraid.
Jesse. You can't be saying that kind of shit.
But like, anyway, just what? I'm glad you didn't get too upset about that because okay. I just thought that was I was originally just going to read the dialogue, but I thought that it's not just the actual dialogue, which is definitely noirish in how it's written down, but their performances draw attention to the fact that their Quark in particular is not talking like he normally talks.
Yeah,
he's talking like Marlowe in one of those like the Big Easy or something.
In fact,
like,
Patrick,
Big Goodbye.
In fact, Patrick, I'm glad you did play it because like for the, when he goes, was I or was he saying
was I when he goes? Those are those Budweiser people from the 1990s.
Right. That yes. You
1999.
1999.
You successfully named a thing.
Was I?
Okay. When Quark quickly goes,
was I?
Yeah, that was like very much like it, and then the whole talk about tea thing. So yes, I'm pleased. I'm pleased that you played that.
It mattered to me.
But two things I'd like to say real quick. That opening sequence at first, because it's been a while since I've seen this, I thought that was like a holiday. I thought he was on a holosuite because of like
it had some vibes.
Vibes of that.
But because it was so purposefully like film noir that it seemed like they were actually in a holosuite because it was very deliberate how they
at
did
first
that.
I did until they talked about it was somebody on Bejor and I was like, oh, okay, wait a minute. They were just on Bejor.
Yeah. And also
it definitely was like, this is a holosuite.
And also regarding the tea, ginger tea, Jesse, if you remember at the end, Odo was saying he must have been a collaborator. He had the money for ginger tea. So apparently this ginger tea is like some expensive. Mm-hmm. They kept talking about this ginger tea this whole episode. And I guess it's really expensive to get ginger tea.
Cardassians had a high tariff on it or something.
Okay, because well, it's like, I got a bunch of ginger in my fucking cupboard.
Yeah, exactly. But here's the thing. If they're ginger, like, okay, look, let me back up. Sometimes
well,
in Star
just,
Trek,
it's not just normal.
Sometimes in Star Trek, when they say something, it's like, oh, it's the alien version. Maybe they're just talking about actual ginger, and it's expensive because it comes from fucking Earth.
Well, they said,
and they're all like, "My, the ginger is fucking amazing. I could buy that ginger is unique in the universe for its awesomeness."
Maybe they don't have chili peppers on other planets either.
They said it was Pyrellian ginger tea.
Oh,
Pyrellian.
Never mind.
That's right.
My theory is undermined entirely.
He had Pyrellian ginger tea.
Unless
Unless
my theory can survive.
No, on the it
head
can't.
On the head cannon. That
it
the
might.
I'll put a cannon on your head.
That the Pyrellians got some ginger from Oyth. And they brought it. They brought it to Pyrellius.
Perhaps they cultivated like, their own strain.
Yeah, they're like, oh, look at this. Ginger grows great on Pyrellius because it's got the right environment. Maybe.
Speaking of,
and they talk like
it's
that.
The dirt.
I'm a Pyrellian.
Speaking of Pyrellian.
Speaking
dirt.
Of cannons,
the pirates of Pyrellian.
Speaking of cannons on heads, don't you think it'd be awesome if we had like hollow suites and we had beltway races where we all get in like Mario Kart style cars with like turtle shell weapons and we have an exact 1-to-1 model of the
Blast the turtle
of,
shell
of 495. Around the DC Beltway, we just race around and like blast each other. Wouldn't that be awesome?
That would be pretty tight.
That'd be tight.
That would be great.
That'd be cool.
For the vast majority of our audience who does not live in the DC region,
go
to Google Maps, look it up, and you'll see what Dan's talking about.
A lot of people have beltways, so they can't
imagine. Lots of cities do.
They don't call them beltways, though.
Well, some of them do.
They call them other things.
They call them like buttways or whatever. I don't
think
they
call them buttways.
Buttways.
All the way around the ways.
I do look forward a little bit later to talking about Rom and
of
all
course,
Rom's been
Max Grodinchuk.
I never got to give my opinion of the episode.
Ah, good. Let's hear Dan's opinion.
Are you sure?
So
Jesse implied his opinion because when I said I thought it was my favorite episode of Deep Space Nine, mm-hmm. Jesse says something along the lines of, and I'm paraphrasing here, with good reason or something like that. I don't know. Or something along those
here's
lines.
My
good reason, sir.
Here's my opinion of the episode. I recognize logically that this
you
is
better recognize.
That this is yes, that this is a good episode. Logically, I recognize that. These kinds of episodes are not so much my cup of tea. But like that doesn't
your
mean
cup
it's...
of ginger tea.
Yes, that but that
Pyrellian
doesn't.
Ginger.
But that doesn't mean it's a bad episode. Like for example, if I was going to go to an authentic Mexican taqueria, I should expect corn
carnitas.
Corn tortilla.
Oh my god! Like, don't you did the thing? Okay, you did the thing, and you did the thing. Like Patrick did the thing where he was figuring out what I was going to say before I said it.
Was it more annoying that Jesse got it wrong and? Or was it more annoying that I got it right?
They were both equally annoying because I'm just trying to say something here.
If you're going to be interrupted, do you prefer to be interrupted with the correct thing?
Just don't interrupt me. Please.
I mean, I agree with that. That's a good starting point.
Okay, so look, what I'm trying to say is if I'm going to a Mexican taqueria, I should probably expect that they have corn tortillas. Mm. And if I don't like corn tortillas, I don't go to an authentic Mexican taqueria, eat a corn tortilla taco, and then give it 1 star on Yelp because I don't like corn tortillas. Yeah,
of course.
Agree.
But people do that, and I've read those reviews. Yeah. I'm not just making up the thing. I read a review just
those
like that.
Those are your neighbors.
Sir. I read a review. No, they're not my neighbors.
The
this
people
is...
that live in your municipality.
How do you know it's where I live now?
I was just talking shit.
Yeah, you are talking shit. So why don't you like not talk shit?
Anyway, Jesse, he in his example, he went to an authentic taqueria.
Which they do
which
have.
Which is not going to be around here.
Well, right, they have stuff that's pretty close.
Pretty close.
So I'm not going to take points off this episode because these kinds of episodes are not something that I'm so much into. It's like the band Rush. I recognize that Rush is an excellent band. I personally don't get much enjoyment from listening to Rush, but I understand that there a lot of people think they're brilliant, and I respect that.
What
you
do
know?
You think of Radiohead?
I think I hate it.
I'm fine with Radiohead. I'm not crazy about them, but like they're good.
What about Rat?
I don't really care.
I don't even know what Rat.
The point I'm making, which I think you probably gathered by now, is that my issues with this episode are not issues with the episode. It's just more of issues with these styles of episodes. And so I hold nothing. I have no ill will towards this episode. I did enjoy it. It's not my favorite kind of episode, but they did a good job with it.
It's well put together.
Yeah.
Well,
and here's the thing. A diversity of opinions is what's going to drive an interesting conversation.
Well, hell yeah.
It's one of the problems when Dan's algorithm, for those who don't know, generally speaking, when we're not doing new episodes of Star Trek, we have an algorithm that Dan has put together, and it selects an episode for us to watch.
Very impressive.
And when when Dan's algorithm selects one of those sort of all-time awesome episodes, that can sometimes
the house down.
That can sometimes be like less appealing than some of the lesser-known episodes, because you know, you watch something like The Inner Light, you watch The Wrath of Khan. It's like, yeah, I'm sure we can have a great conversation about that, but there's always that pressure of like.
But so is everybody.
Exactly, everyone else has talked about these, and when they're just sort of universally beloved, it's like okay. And then sure, you can take the opposite viewpoint, but the thing is. We're not going to do that on purpose.
Irony of ironies.
It is a one drawback of our podcast is that we are.
This is It's Got Star Trek.
It's Got Star Trek. We're honest. And if we all like something, we're just going to say we're going to say we like it. If we don't like it, we're going to say we don't like it.
We're going to do the weird episode.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, you know, whatever. I don't know exactly what got me started on that.
I don't know.
On that topic.
Nobody
believe me, I have no idea.
There you go. I was just giving you an excuse to use a contextually appropriate sound.
No.
No. Beginning of the episode.
Yes.
Beginning of the episode starts out all stormy and stuff.
Stormy and a stormy. It's an episode that's stormy. Stormy starts the episode. That's how it starts. Yeah.
Crackle.
Dan's like, quit interrupting me.
I did it to get back at you guys.
I don't think so.
I did. I swear. I actively.
I thought it was fun.
I actively did that to get back at you.
I was not.
But my plan was foiled because Jesse.
I was not affronted by that.
Because Jesse. My plan was foiled because Jesse seemed to enjoy the whole thing.
Irony of ironies.
Dan. All I'm going to say is watch out for that big red ring because that's a tick.
Help! Somebody help!
Could be ringworm.
All right.
What are you talking about? Tick? Are you talking about me singing was like a verbal audit thing? Tick?
Yes, but I was using a Lyme disease joke.
Yeah,
Lyme disease jokes, pretty hilarious.
Yeah, yeah, very, very, very much.
Anyway,
so.
Okay.
Yes.
What about key Lyme disease?
Oh,
lemon Lyme.
That made me giggle. Okay.
Everything's under control.
No, it's not. But we're gonna get back on track here. So, Quark meets this lady.
Lady.
She gives him this job.
Job.
She implies that she'll give him some kick-ass umaks out of the bargain.
Almost past the first part.
Almost. Then he and Rom break into. I forget, what is it now? It used to be the chemist shop. Now it's just a storeroom or something.
It's just a store, general store.
Like an apothecary, right? Right.
Yeah. Well, no, that's what it used to be. It used to be a drug. Right. Because when they were in that that chemist shop later, Odo goes, I don't use chemicals. Like, so it's just a drug.
Like, I don't use chemicals.
So I guess it was just a place to get high, basically, right? It's where you got high drugs.
I don't know.
Maybe it was like a drug store kind of thing.
Yeah, but if it's a chemist shop, that implies like some more serious shit.
Well, yeah, but sometimes... Sometimes in Britain they call it a chemist.
The thing is one way to interpret Odo saying, I don't use chemicals, I've definitely taken it. Alternatively, him meaning he doesn't use chemicals, as in he doesn't. You know, what was it in Star
he doesn't
Wars?
Need them.
What was it in Attack of Clones where they're like using like smoke sticks?
Death sticks.
Okay. So stupid.
A little on the nose there.
So I've often taken it as Odo meaning that, but when I watched it this time, I was actually like, you know, he could just be saying like, I'm a fucking changeling. I don't use chemicals.
But they're in some shady Cardassian space station. You know they want to keep the public
mollified,
subdued, and all that
so
shit.
So you think the Cardassians helped mollify the public by giving them access?
They molluscified them. They mollusk them.
I can buy that, and it's something that I've often...
Would you buy it for $1? Would you buy it for
$2?
Would you buy it for 100,000 litas? Because that's the form of currency that they have, is litas. That's what they
Bajoran
have.
Bajoran litas.
Litas are... Yeah, they're Bajoran monies. And interestingly enough, do you remember how Rom, his girlfriend was named Lita? Do you think Rom dated her because her name sounded like money
in
Bajoran?
That's probably what he liked.
Yeah.
One was spelled L-I-T-A and the other was L-E-E-T-A, but they were both meant money.
I didn't make that
and
connection.
And that's why Rom wanted it.
That's worse.
She was also very sweet.
That's a good connection.
I know.
He seemed like a nice
person. Jesse. Isn't it cool that we get to hang out with this guy?
I know, right?
What's that supposed to mean?
He's smart. He's got all these sounds. He's clever. He makes these clever connections.
He says, like, funny things.
Oh, he's like, insightful things about the
show. Why didn't like that?
You know,
he keeps us in line.
I honestly don't know.
He tells us when we need to straighten up.
Oh, man, you make me sound like some kind of authoritarian.
No, we don't. Do we?
Keeps it, tells us when we get to shut the fuck up. Keeps us in line.
He hits us. He frequently hits us during breaks. Speaking of which, we are just about up on a break.
What?
But yes, but I wanted to just, you know, get to the point where Quark gets shot, because again, great scene where that's funny, of course. Yeah. Rom is always hilarious with his reactions.
No.
I enjoyed Quark getting caught. He opens the thing, he looks at the list. It's funny that we live in an era in the distant past of these people where we always have a camera on us in our pockets, and he has to tell Rom to go get an imaging device.
Yeah.
So Rom goes off conveniently. The shady guy who was talking to Valtrex comes in, and then
I love how Quark like flies across the room. And it's funny to pause it right before he goes flying away, because his face looks all weird, because it's like some kind of CG or stunt person or something. I don't know. It looks so weird.
What I liked about it was the snappy dialogue.
Doesn't that dude throw Rom across the room like later on?
Yeah, he does. In the med bay.
Yeah.
But he, they have this fun little dialogue between Quark and the guy where the guy's like, I'm sorry. And Quark's like, yeah, me too.
Right.
Me too.
Now, they had Quark and Rom break in, even though that guy was going to go check on him anyway. I'm wondering why they didn't. Why they had that guy follow him. I know why they had him follow him, because like they didn't trust them, but why did they need them in the first place? I guess because they were the ones that would have gotten in trouble, like trying to, I guess breaking in was the hard part.
Yeah, I think the guy probably would not have been able to break in as easily.
Yeah. And so did let them break in and then follow.
She's asking Quark at the beginning, like, can you do this?
I'll
tell you what we can do. We can take a break. And then when we get back from the break, not only will we have a suggestion up, not only will we have continued discussion of necessary evil, but it looks like Dan's got something.
Well, I just wanted to, but when we come back, there was something about that scene I also wanted to mention.
All right, we're going to continue talking about that scene when we come back from the break, will be, what do I say? I was like, we will be right back.
Stop by one of the horror suites.
And we're back.
Two programs for the price of one.
Okay. Going back to my childhood, going back to when I was 13, watching this on air, I remember always how awkward that line reading was.
Yes.
From Armin Shimerman, who is a consummate professional. He's always great. It was clearly incorrect. He did something weird, but because of the nature of the shot, I have to imagine that James L. Conway just really liked how Odo came into view in the camera pan or something.
Okay, so the whole sequence was, because the whole thing was weird. It began with and then it goes,
stop by one of the horror suites. Two programs for the price of one.
Now, okay, there's two ways to look at that. Because on the one hand, yes, maybe it was bad line reading. But on the other hand, like, I can remember back when I worked in restaurants trying to be, like, overly gregarious with customers. And it comes off really forced and kind of like that. It was kind of triggering in a way, because it reminded me of, like, oh, I think I've been like that sometimes. And it, like, and you see as he walks away, he's, like, not smiling anymore. It's like you could tell he put on a show. And then when he's walking away, it, like, it all leaves him. So it could be either way. But the way I took it was that he was just being like, you know, the gregarious host, and I use the word gregarious for a third time, but he was just doing that, and like,
would you like to now take the opportunity to use a synonym for gregarious?
Jovially excitable,
sure.
I don't know.
It's good enough.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with your observation, other than to say the problem is that we know that Quark is good at this. He is a good salesman.
But these were older times.
But 5 years before.
Not that much.
You know, it's funny to think that we
see him being a good salesman in that time period.
You know, it is funny to think that the occupation ended like less than 5 years prior.
It ended right before Cisco showed up.
I guess that's true.
That's why everyone's all sad.
Certainly.
Stop by one of the horror suites. Two programs for the price of one. Two programs for the price of one. Two programs for the price of one. Stop by one of the horror suites. 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 Two programs for the price of one.
He swallows and stumbles over the stop by one of the horror suites.
Stop by one of the horror suites.
So that's already a problem. And then the Two programs for the price of one. Like, just the cadence of that is incorrect.
Two programs for the price of one.
Two programs for the price of one.
And he sticks his fingers out, and it's just everything's weird about it. However,
everything's weird about
it. The camera pans across, and then Odo enters, and it's a low shot looking up at Odo, making him look sort of mysterious and aggressive and all that other stuff. I'm guessing that really was framed nicely, better than the other takes, and so that's why they took the
speaking,
weird take.
Speaking of shots that were framed cool, when Odo, first of all, when Sisko and Odo were grilling Rom, I like how, like, Odo and Sisko presumably didn't have any time to work this out beforehand, but Sisko got on the same page as Odo,
it
like,
was total
real fast.
Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, right. And but
at
like,
first, you think Sisko's just being nice, but then Sisko's like, no,
but like,
I'm playing good cop.
But it's funny because, like, they never really got an opportunity to, like, be like, okay, I'm good cop, you're bad. Like, they just naturally fell into it. They just knew to do it. But when Rom goes, it was a list. The man who shot my brother stole a list. And then right then, Odo's face comes from off the screen, a profile off the screen, and he goes, what kind of list? And as he's saying it, as he starts saying what, you see his face, and when he ends on list, his face is like right up in Rom's face, and it's just this weird, I like the shot because it's like no Odo face, and then from the side it just appears like this floating head off the
side
of the screen.
Lots of great shots, excellent framing, excellent cinematography all throughout this episode. The end of the episode, not to jump ahead, but the closing shot with Odo juxtaposed across the console with Kira, and they're both kind of upset. Great, great ending. Beautiful shot.
Is so her, yeah, that's right. Her first name is Nira. Nerys. Pa! What I was going to
did you say your thing? Was that the follow up?
No, that wasn't. The follow up was
side quest.
So side quest. Well, which is actually it's more that was the side quest.
That was the side quest. Okay. Side quest concluded. Back to the main quest. Whoa. Then the long awaited suggest-em-ups.
Yes, correct. Two part for the price one. Two programs for the price one.
Not that long.
Two programs for the price one.
We're dangerous.
We're dangerous. Two programs for the price one.
We're dangerous.
Two programs for the price of one.
We're dangerous.
So first of all, now I'm always wanting to know, like, the first times of things. Was this the first time we found out that Rom is kind of capable and competent in certain respects?
I don't think it's the first time. It may be the most significant. I'm not remembering a specific example, but my recollection is that Rom was initially introduced as sort of a total fool, but I think even at the beginning there were always a little hints that there was something more to him. But
this is only second.
This is definitely more than I think we're used to seeing of his competence.
It is, and more specifically, other people calling out his competence, like Odo, in specifically saying he's not as dumb as he looks.
Was this the first time we saw like we got hints that Odo had strong feelings for Kira, even if it's not maybe not romantic in that point, but you could tell that he was felt really cared
might
about.
Might be,
her.
I can't recall,
but
exactly. But
so
might be.
Anyway, so that whole scene, like it's Rom like convincing Quark that he can do all this shit, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I thought it was funny that Quark's Latinum vault floor, it's like you can open it just by like pouring some acid on it, and like fucking Quark,
it was special acid,
and like it was special acid, but like fucking Rom like paid for it out of his own salary. Like, that's some bullshit. Like, Rom shouldn't have to do that, you know?
That's Rom's character.
Yeah, but
he doesn't have the lobes for business.
He doesn't. But
well, that's what Quark says. Anyway.
So, anyways, Quark says he can open the Pulsatel lock seal with a desealing rod in 25 seconds. Yeah, and Rom insists that he can do it in 10 seconds. Now,
this is some fucking Ultima Online. No, this is like Baldur's Gate. No, this is like D&D.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was all the same thing.
Yeah, basically all the same. It all comes from the same world.
Yeah, that was,
or said, not world, but concept.
Baldur's Gate's
but I was perhaps too subtle in my joke. That was the intended, the sort of the intended subtext was that data.
The desealing rod is like a magical sword.
Like is it like a self-sealing stem bolt?
Like a lockpick set.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. So by the way, Nog made Rom his lockpicking device, but they should have used a 3D printer. But Nog just kind of made it with his hands.
Maybe like, he made it with a replicator.
He said that Rom Nog is always good with his hands or whatever.
Yeah. He used his hands to type in the instructions.
He said, boy's always been clever with his hands.
Is he good with his fingers?
Jesse.
That was that other guy.
But what I was going to say is, So Rom was insisting that he can do it in 10. By the time they got to the door, it was the time in the show was at 6 minutes and 5 seconds when they got to the door. Rom talks about how he can like do it in 10 seconds. And by the time he's finished talking about it, he doesn't actually start until 6 minutes and 18 seconds. So about 13 seconds passes where Rom is just talking about how he can do it in 10 seconds, mm-hmm. right? And then once he starts...
Before they even try it.
Before he even tries it. Now, once he starts at 6 minutes and 18, it ends at 6:22. So he actually took about... 4 seconds.
All right.
4 seconds to do it. He said he can do it in 10.
Well, maybe that was just clever editing.
He took it in 4. Well, it was a one-er. If you look at it, it was a one-er.
A lot of one-ers in this episode.
So it took him 4 seconds to do it when he said it was 10. But the problem was, is he talked about it for 13 seconds before he even started. So in the end, I guess it was a little faster than what Quark would do. But like, if they thought 25 seconds was too long, I don't know why he thought talking about it for 13 seconds wasn't too long. You know what I mean? Like, you'd think Rom was so worried about getting caught, yet he wasn't worried about like just chatting about how good he was at it for 13 whole seconds. Where's the magic? The fact that they didn't get caught?
From my perspective, it's less about the magic of television.
It's all magic.
And more about the frailty of, well, I was about to say human, but you know, entities, sentient. Sapient entities.
That Rom was willing to risk his own life just to prove his own, like just to sort of quell his insecurities by explaining to Quark that he was good enough.
Well, he wasn't risking his life. He was maybe risking arrest in this case.
Well, arrest, but still, he was. If he's worried, if I'm worried about taking 25 seconds on something, I'm not going to shit and bullshit around about it for 13 seconds.
Exactly, but that's what I'm getting at, is that there are different forms of intelligence. Intelligence is not a specific.
What's that supposed to mean?
A linear scale. Rom is clever in certain ways.
Scooby and Dooby days.
Not so clever in other ways, correct?
This is true. Okay. This is a good point.
All right.
This is a good point. You make a good point, Patrick.
All right.
You're dangerous. Let's.
You're dangerous.
Let's get through a very brief suggest-em-up.
Oh, yes.
So I wanted to talk very briefly about some noir movies, since this is a noir episode.
And sounds wonderful for the children.
I was thinking about it, and I watched this episode, 1993, as it turns out.
Get out!
I didn't get into noir movies until college. Oh, I thought there was going to be some clever...
A day. Maybe two.
Do you have like a... Okay, that just doesn't... That's what we would... We used to call it non sequitur.
No,
I don't know what we call them.
No,
now.
You said I didn't get into noirs until
a day, maybe two.
Yeah,
until later.
Yeah, but that doesn't really make sense.
Maybe a day, maybe two later. No, well, it doesn't have to be perfectly accurate.
5 or 6 years.
It's not a non sequitur. It's just not quite accurate. Well,
what I'm getting at is
I don't care.
I liked this episode when it aired, and I had limited or no knowledge of the noir genre, or as Alex Trebek would say,
irony of ironies.
Genre. If you want to have some fun, go onto the old YouTube. Maybe you can find it on Vimeo or Twitch. I don't know, but it's definitely on YouTube.
Vimeo.
And look up, there's like a 10-12 minute compilation of every time Alex Trebek, the host of Jeopardy.
If you know who Alex Trebek is.
The deceased, recently deceased host of Jeopardy. Every time,
you're lying.
Every time he says the word genre, and you'll have a good time, I assure you. So go check that out. But in the meantime, I got into film noir later, but I'm wondering if this episode primed me for that. So when I started watching it I was initially introduced to film noir in an official capacity.
Deep Space Prime.
I was taking a class on LA films, which was a really cool class.
He one of them class boys.
No, it was just a regular old college film class.
College class boys.
Why are men like that?
A lot of noir films just so happened to take place in either Los Angeles or San Francisco. Right. A lot take place in Los Angeles, I believe. Double Indemnity does. Big Lebowski, which has huge noir elements. It's very noir influence. That takes place in L.A. as well.
Chinatown.
But I thought I'd just mention...
Yes, you become the student of humanoid nature, haven't you?
Some of the fun movies you might dig, and you let me know, both of you let me know what you think of some of these, but Dan, you in particular, because you said you're not quite into these, you're not taking points away from this episode for being a noir, but that it's not quite your bag of tea.
When I watch Star Trek, I usually like when I'm doing a noir thing, I kind of want to be in a specific mood for it.
Well, what about
Bob? I don't know. What about Bob?
What about
Patrick?
Bob is great. What,
that's a non sequitur, Patrick. Why did you bring that up?
At this point, that's a common thing that people say.
What about Bob is not a noir. It is a horror movie. Mm. The way to understand What About Bob is to watch it as a horror movie. So go do that right now.
Is that some sort of sexual reference?
But the Maltese Falcon, that's a great noir. If you like this episode, check out the Maltese Falcon. I'm sure you can find it for free on one of the services. If you haven't seen it, if you have seen it, then you know it's good and you're going to be prompted to go back and check it out again. Humphrey Bogart, famous, fun story. It's not a long movie. Great fucking dialogue. Really nicely filmed. Clips along very, very swiftly. Another great one, The Third Man. Suggest 'em ups. The Third Man. Yeah. One of my favorites. Mm-hmm. Takes place in Vienna. It was actually filmed.
The one in the graveyard?
Well, there's graveyard. Yeah, starts and ends in the graveyard that you've visited. But a lot of the city was still burnt out from the war because it takes place right after the war during the post-war occupation. Third Man's
Burn
grave.
The house down.
Already mentioned Double Indemnity. That's got the guy from My Three Sons.
Oh yeah.
Except he's. He's involved in some shadier shit.
And My Cousin Vinny.
Chinatown. Chinatown's like a neo. This is when you start getting into the neo noirs where it's in color. Mm. Chinatown's a great, great flick.
Right, neo.
But for sci-fi people, Star Trek is sci-fi nominally, right? Famously Blade Runner. And especially if you get the original version where they tacked on that Harrison Ford narration, which I haven't seen in forever. Have you seen the?
Which is the one? They say the one without narration is better.
That's the director's cut. That's the one I'm used to seeing.
That's when they say it's better.
Yeah, because the narration is kind of unnecessary. You really can get everything in the course of the film, but the narration is a noir element, so it's not it's unsurprising that the theater was into that. Do you guys remember Dark City? Did either of you see Dark City?
I've never seen Dark City, but I'm very aware of it.
Okay, so Dark City is the movie that got fucked over by like The Matrix coming out. Because Dark City is a really good movie, but the two things that happened that undermined it were, first, the Matrix came out around the same time and was flashier and kind of dealt with some similar things, but it went its own direction. I think Dark City is a much more existentially disturbing movie. The other thing that got fucked up was that Dark City, and if you're looking for a version to watch, you can watch out for this. The studio thought that it would confuse people.
No spoilers.
No, I'm not going to give spoilers.
No spoilers.
That's what I'm getting at.
I want to see it.
Yeah, this is exactly what I'm getting at. So the studio basically tacked on a huge spoiler to the beginning of Dark City.
Okay.
To what the because like it's not even about twists or anything. It's just like the story of Dark City. I'm Darth Silly.
Okay, I think we get the point of what you're saying.
But yeah, so check which version you're getting. That's the tricky bit. What are some other ones?
Don't push me.
Mulholland Drive. If you like some crazy ass Lynch, David Lynch lunacy. You know, he just passed away not too long ago. I really enjoy it, but it's weird. Devil in a Blue Dress.
Devil in a Blue Dress
is a fun one. Insomnia. Do you remember Insomnia? Did any of you watch Insomnia?
I might have seen that, but I don't really remember.
It's got Robin Williams and Al Pacino in it, and it's interesting. I'm not going to say it's a brilliant movie. It's good. What's cool about Insomnia is the gimmick. Is that it's a film noir, but it's filmed in Alaska during the daytime zone where it's like, it's bright out 24 hours. So it's got all the noir elements, except instead of being dark and foggy, it's all fucking bright. And it's all weird and bright because it's all horrifying. But the last one I wanted to mention, just because it's really one of my favorite more recent movies, is The Nice Guys. Have you guys seen The Nice Guys?
No.
Oh, man, you got to see The fucking Nice Guys. Mm. I'm not going to say anything more than
I will have to see The Nice Guys.
It is now an imperative.
Jesse and Dan, I guarantee you, you will be highly entertained by The Nice Guys. And for you all out in the audience, I don't know you all personally, but there's a hype. Probability, if you like this podcast, you're probably gonna like The Nice Guys.
Go check
out The Nice Guys. Well,
that's another one.
Yeah, that's another one where it says good catch, Jesse.
Don't push me, Odo.
See, it ends with Odo.
I'm paying attention this week.
Yeah, on point. But you can tell that even though it's referring to Odo, you can tell that I might be referring to whoever it is I'm pointing my face at when I play it.
Not just your face, your long bony fingers.
Don't push me.
Wagging those fingers around all evening.
He's been wagging those fingers a lot of wagging and wiggling.
Don't push me, Odo.
Wow. See, anyway, telling you guys, Patrick, not to push me.
No, those were all suggest 'em ups, not demand 'em ups.
Okay,
not order 'em ups. There's suggestive. Right,
just check them out, Mubs.
Yeah.
Blackmail.
But any folks out there who have not sort of explored around in the film noir space, go check them out. Old, new, middle age. I don't know what
there's
the term
a bunch.
Is. It's a fun genre, and I think people who aren't familiar with it is worth giving a chance.
An investigator.
That's what they do.
Indeed.
So
hardly newer.
Okay. So those are some good suggestive ups. We can see that
your epidermis is perfectly normal.
Say what?
We can see that your
epidermis is showing.
Your epidermis is perfectly normal. You didn't get that line? I'm shocked that you didn't get that line. You didn't get the line of Odo saying your epidermis is perfectly normal?
I don't remember that part.
It's when he's interrogating Valtrex and Dr. Mm-hmm. Dr. Valtrex.
Yes.
Paging Dr. Valtrex. He's interrogating her or asking her questions. In the past, after her husband is murdered, and he points out that she hasn't cried, and she says, "What do you mean right. I haven't cried?" And he's like, "I've figured out that I've observed that humans their epidermis gets all puffy and weird."
That reminds me that I did have a 6-point list. That
good.
So, and this actually takes me to that. If we want to go,
I'm excited and eager for
okay.
a list.
This list,
one of Dan's classic lists.
This is called a 6-point list called Smooth Odo. So this is the...
And you're not talking about his face.
No. Oh, come on,
well,
you.
It kind of works on both levels.
No.
No, I know it does. That's very funny. Very droll. this is because of like how Odo used his detective magic. So number one, Odo, what you just mentioned, Odo could tell that Paul Rowe wasn't crying because of like looking at her epidermis or whatever. Yeah. Anyways, by the way, though, I don't think that's fair because each person is allowed to grieve in their own way. And just because she's not crying doesn't mean she's not guilty. If somebody said that to me, you know what I would say? You know what I would say? No, wait. You know what I would say if somebody said that to me?
What would you say?
I'd say, don't tell me how to be. Right. That's
exactly.
what I would say.
Yes, but Dan, again, I think this is one of those cases where you're jumping the gun a little bit because he very cleverly, in my view, he very cleverly did not accuse her of not mourning properly. He just asked. He said, I'm asking, your husband just died 2 hours ago. Why haven't you cried? And she said, why do you think I haven't cried? She gave the wrong answer. You're right. She should have at that point said, like, hey, people mourn in different ways.
See, so
or I hated the piece
well,
of shit.
Well, the answer that she gave that was I thought was a bad answer, she was like, well, I was angry, in shock. When she started giving different answers, and when you start giving several answers to the same question,
it was all his fucking tea. I hate that fucking tea.
That's when it starts sounding guilty. But anyways, fair enough. But yeah, I don't know. I guess you're right. I guess maybe. I don't know. It's just he seemed a little accusatory because he said like, "Oh, I noticed that you haven't been crying."
Well, he's kind of an asshole.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is true. I mean, and sometimes it's funny because like as Dan you mentioned earlier, his malicious compliance with the forced logs, definitely hilarious, definitely in character. It's also kind of assholey.
Yeah.
More overtly assholey is when Odo is just super racist against Ferengi. He's like, they sell their own grandmothers or something, which is an uncomfortable overlay of unfortunate real world stereotypes that are kind of being applied here. Yeah, so Odo can be a piece of shit.
Okay, number two, he could tell that Kira didn't work in the mines when she said she did because he looked at her hands. Now that's a classic one that often happens in shows. Where like, oh, your hands look so smooth. But I was thinking about it. Like,
you have terrorist hands instead of worker hands.
He's good at investigating, not just because he's shifts shape. Shapes.
Shift shape.
He shifts shapes.
Okay, he can shape shift, which makes him
shapes.
Sorry, it's like you made that funny, dude.
He's good at investigating, not just because he shapeshifts, which makes them able to blend in and spy on things and stuff like that, but he's also good at noticing things. Now, why is he good at noticing things? Probably because he's always And he's always paying attention to people to learn how to blend in with them. Part of being able
and he's an outsider.
Part of being able to shape shift into like your environment means you have to notice all the very subtle things that go on, so you blend in perfectly. So that makes you good at noticing things. On top of that, like you just said, he is alone, and he's sort of like alone and an outsider.
He's alone and not an outsider.
Yeah,
but he's
an outsider. So he notices things because he can't be a part of them. But he wants to be a part of them, yes. But he can't be. So the best way he can do that is by like trying to like notice what watch them and all that stuff about them. So all that comes together to make him. I think it's interesting, this idea that a shapeshifter also makes a good investigator, not just because they can blend in, because they can change forms, but also because the skills required to be able to change shifts mentally is to notice shit. Number three, he noticed that Paro was able to pay her power bill the day after all this stuff went down, when it had recently been cut off for lack of payment.
Yeah.
So she got her money somehow. Number four.
Oh, can I pause real quick?
You can.
Because remember when he when Odo does the whole power bill thing?
Power bill. Power bills. Power makes it go.
Because remember, he's walking out. Before Odo asks her. Before both of these guys.
I got Jesse.
Audience, both of these guys are lunching out now.
Power Wheels is what we were.
Yes, it's old Power Wheels commercial. So Odo is talking to Valerian Valtrex and
Vincent Vega Valerian Valtrex.
And it's all nice and pleasant. He's like talking about old time, blah blah blah. Oh, thank you, blah blah blah. And he's all walking away. And then
he Columboed him.
Yeah. Oh. There was one other thing.
Oh, listen, there's one other thing I wanted to ask you about.
There's one more thing, sir.
Oh, one other thing.
One more thing.
Gee, I almost forgot what I came here to ask you.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, like, you're a big Columbo fan.
What are you talking about?
Well, you knew where to grab all those Columbo clips.
There was one other thing.
That's Odin.
Oh, listen, there's one other thing. I want to ask you about.
That's Columbo. Right.
Oh, there's one more thing, sir.
Oh,
we're going to listen to the whole
thing.
One more thing.
Gee, I almost forgot what I came here to ask.
That's kind of like last week when I played all those quotes from the orb in Justice, and you didn't recognize some of those orb quotes. I don't remember Odo saying some of those, but I guess all those were in the episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have to listen to last week's episode to know what we're talking about. But the same thing.
Yeah. Last week we discussed Star Trek: The Next Generation's Justice.
Yeah.
Dan mentioned that.
Right? Yeah.
I was reiterating that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He somehow knew, number four, he somehow knew Quark was lying about Kira's favors to Quark. Remember when Quark was being extra sleazy for some reason and saying that Kira got her job by doing, like, you know.
Yeah, right.
Is that some sort of sexual reference?
Yeah, he did the thing that Chris Farley does in Billy Madison. When he's like, oh, that Veronica Vaughn. That's Billy Madison.
That
right?
Veronica Vaughn is one.
She's one piece of ass.
She's one piece of ace.
And I should know.
He goes, I know from experience, dude.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, he was doing that somehow. And somehow Odo knew that he was lying. He doesn't know Kira that well. So either that could mean A, he was really good at reading Kira, or B, his feelings were getting in the way. Mm-hmm. And like, actually, maybe she could have been capable of that, but Odo felt Artie's feeling romantic feelings towards her. So it could have been actually clouding his judgment about when Quark said that. But I'd like to think that Odo just really was able to notice that Kira wouldn't do something like that, or whatever.
Yeah, and all of I think the other thing in there is, it's always been sort of the case with Kira, and they do this with some of the characters, where you understand that she has had this past, but then when you kind of see examples of it, it's discordant with what you know about her. Even though you understand this history that she's been involved with the Bajoran Underground, and presumably has had to get involved in some shady, not so pleasant business.
The Bundagrand.
So it's unsurprising that Odo has a sort of a, even though he doesn't know her background, of course, in the flashback, but that's it's so normalized for her that a perfectly normal person can be involved in these types of things.
Well, it's interesting. A real quick side quest again.
Real quick.
Speaking of the underground situation, so Dukat wanted Odo to investigate this murder, right? Because he's like this independent sort of sneaky shapeshifter guy. Gul Dukat is kind of the reason Odo is as successful as he is today. So we have Dukat to thank for Odo. Odo should be grateful in a way.
Odo owes his career.
Yeah,
Odo
owes. And so the reason Odo took the gig is he thought he was doing a good thing by finding out who the murderer was, mm-hmm. and this is really good, you know. But really, he was just helping Dukat fight the underground because these people getting killed were his connections, mm-hmm. his basically his rats to the underground.
The collaborators.
Collaborators. Yeah. So the underground was fucking up his connections, and he was just getting Odo to prevent them from doing that. So Odo thought he was being noble, but really he was like getting in the way of all that. So it's kind of interesting how he got kind of played a little bit like that. You also notice throughout this episode, Odo starts off like really like kind of quiet and sheepish, but he gains confidence really fast as the episode goes on.
He takes to the role.
Yeah, he does.
For the reasons that you just explicated a mere few minutes ago.
A mere few.
That
was a reason explication.
That
a
the
day. Maybe two.
The writing on Deep Space Nine is just so fucking brilliant because they understand their characters and then they produce stories based off of these complex characters that they created, and they let those characters evolve with the actors and with the performances, with the writing, in very interesting ways. But they were set up from the beginning. Mm-hmm. All of the characters have these interesting backgrounds. Mm-hmm. It's a station full of misfits by definition, and we learned so much about Odo. Mm-hmm. We learned so much about Kira.
Yeah, there was some interesting things because this is
Rom and Quark and all.
And this
that.
Is the episode where we find out where Odo meets Quark, where Odo meets Dukat, where Odo meets Kira, where Odo gets called Constable, his name Constable.
Kira
from.
Gives him the, basically she's mocking him, which is kind of funny. That's another thing. Like,
and he doesn't
unpack that.
And like in some of the early episodes, every once in a while he would say like he doesn't like being called Constable in like the other episodes, and so maybe that's a tie back to that where it sort of reminds him of like that. I don't know. Or maybe he just doesn't like the title. He doesn't like the responsibility, the official responsibility. I don't know. He doesn't like to be called Constable sometimes.
I don't know if he's all that good at in the first place.
I don't like the responsibility of having to watch that clock over there.
I have two more points.
Time again.
I'm sorry. We just got to take a break. Okay. But that's good because people will listen through the break in order to hear.
They'll listen all the way through.
The final 2 points. So when we get back, we will have Dan's final 2 points. And then we'll wrap up the discussion of this excellent episode of Star Trek DC.
Salad.
We will be
on the other side of the break.
Right back.
I really ought to be getting back to my bar.
And we have returned.
Yeah, me too.
Always been here.
Cardassian neck trick.
Cardassian neck trick. Wait.
You did a Cardassian neck trick. Cardassian neck trick.
You do some Cardassian neck trick.
What do you think the Cardassian neck trick is? Is it just him making a Cardassian neck?
I think so. I think that's what it was. It's just the funniest thing ever.
This is
like, look at this guy.
This is something that's been debated in Star Trek circles since this episode aired. And
the sabotage.
Those circles can go.
There's been some other references to the Cardassian neck trick, but some people say, yes, it's just him morphing
part of it. Just his neck
Cardassian
area?
Neck.
Just his neck area?
But
it's all snaky.
I kind of buy into the argument. So a lot of people buy into that. A lot of people are like, that's all it is. He's just kind of doing a partial transformation into a Cardassian. What doesn't make sense about that to me
is why it would bring the house down.
And why, yes, exactly, is why would people be so, so fucking excited?
Yeah.
Because it's not just, I mean, Dukat sounds sincerely fascinated and excited about this.
You did a Cardassian neck trick.
And Quark is
you do some
fucking
Cardassian neck.
He's like, I can make so much fucking money. He's thinking about making money. It's not just being entertained. It's people will pay money to see this trick.
Big in this room.
There's something exploitative about it.
Well, clearly. And that's the other thing that makes me think there must be something going on. Like maybe he does an undulating wiggly wobbles or something.
Yeah.
Or maybe he has a flappy neck.
Or maybe he like makes his neck all long like a cobra neck.
Yeah.
Like a Cardassian.
Well, that's what
Cardassians are like cobras.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Maybe he looks like some sort of Tim Burton-esque nightmare.
No, don't say that.
Burton.
Big goofy clay eyes.
No.
You're just saying no, and you have all these no recordings.
No. It's not true.
Remember points 5 and 6.
5 and 6 out of the 6-point list.
Five.
Smooth Odo. He could tell when Kira was lying just because of how her face changed. He could just look at her face and be like, you're lying. And interestingly enough, she...
That's how I know when you're lying, asshole.
Oh.
No, I'm just playing.
Interestingly enough, she liked it when he said that. She's like, thanks. I'm glad to know that I'm not
I think she was playing him.
She...
I think she was playing
him. Well, I'm not done with my list yet.
I think she looked obvious. I think she was obviously lying to make him think.
I'm not done with my list yet.
Okay.
Thanks.
That's when she was like, thanks. I'm glad you think I'm a bad liar. And then number six... He figured out that Kira did call Vatrick. Kill Vatrick, not call Vatrick. Kill Vatrick. He figured that out. Which, by the way, he did. He could have been a little smoother about that. Because, like, Paaro was like, I didn't kill him. And he goes, I know. Like, why did he say that in front of her? Why didn't he just leave?
In front of Kira, you mean?
In front of Paaro. Like, because, like, he put Paaro...
Well, he was saying in front of Kira.
Well, he said in front of both of them. He was putting Paaro away, and Paaro goes, well, you won't be able to convict me because I didn't do it. And he's like, I know. It's like, if you're putting someone in jail, you're not going to be like, I know you're innocent right in front of them.
Yeah, she's not innocent of the crime she's in jail for. He's using her as a puppet to fuck with Kira.
No, I know, but the point is...
In the friendly,
that,
nice
no,
way.
No, I know, but the point is that... If he was going to be extra smart about it, he wouldn't have said anything in front of her. And then when they left the room, then he'd start fucking with Kira. Like I'm saying, he shouldn't have done it in front of Paaro because there was no reason for it. There was no advantage for him to say that in front of Paaro unless he was just trying to be cute and clever.
I mean, that's for me. It's that. That's the latter.
Yeah, but that's funny. But that's not. But it's not.
More, it's more interesting.
But it's not. It's less tactful. It's not as tactful.
But he's also conveying to Vartok.
Yeah, but it's unnecessarily Vatrick. It's unnecessarily dramatic for a person to do that.
Yeah, but why wouldn't he? He was kind of friendly, not friends with her, but had this previous relationship.
But it's just
interaction.
It's just you're sacrificing strategy to be like, hey, I'm clever.
Well, he solved the mystery, and she was a core part of the mystery.
Yeah, but like if you're gonna,
he's telling her, I know you didn't because I've solved the mystery.
It's behavior like that. It's like when you watch a movie and the fighter knocks the dude down, and he turns around and goes, yeah, I'm the best, and then that other dude gets up and like punches him because he wasn't looking. It's like that's he was opening himself up for.
I just don't think that analogy
like she's guilty
applies.
Of, no, she's guilty of something else, and so he's like, "Yeah, you're not guilty of that."
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm saying he was giving away more information than was strategically necessary, and I think that was unnecessary. There was no need for it.
Speaking of,
I'm not done with my list.
I'm not done. I know, but this is just one of those little tiny points. One of those tiny points.
Okay,
that relates to what you were just talking about. Valtrex, Vartek.
How many Vatrick. Times have we done that?
Vatrick, Miss Vatrick, Paola Vatrick.
Uh-huh.
I really enjoyed how in the flashbacks she looked like she didn't have a lot, but she's still better than a lot of the other Bajorans wandering around the station. Clearly, she
had her own room or something.
Yeah, and her dress was nicer and cleaner, but very simple. But then in the contemporary times, she was so over the top in how fancy
elegant
she was, but she also was broke.
Yeah,
so she's one of those people that I guess used their wealth too quickly because they wanted to not feel like they were living.
She
in
should
poverty.
Have invested.
Yeah,
you don't invest in like. Expensive shuttle crafts and things like that because they lose value as soon as you take them out of the shuttle
out of the system.
Shuttle pod.
I got the impression system. She might have had the old Elton John problem where she used to buy a bunch of flowers every
day. Bunch of flowers.
Yeah, have a bunch of
well,
flowers.
Well, what I was going to end on is Odo maybe wasn't as smooth as he thought because he was wrong. Kira was a good liar.
He's pretty smooth when he gets in that bucket.
He doesn't know everything. So he was smooth all throughout, and he was pretty smooth when he detected she was lying, and she was even like, oh, thank you for not calling me liar, but he wasn't. That's the twist, because she was right all along.
Yeah, because she was not only good at lying, she pretended she fooled him.
Fooled you!
Classic. That's a classic line from Spaceballs.
I gotta get that sound effect.
Coming up in 2027, Spaceballs 2, The Search for More Money.
Thanks.
Is it actually going to be called that?
We'll see what, who knows? We'll see.
Certainly.
Yes.
It's going to have like two people in it or something? Like,
no, most of them are still alive. Rick Moranis is coming back. Yeah. He's coming out of retirement.
What about
Bill Pullman?
Colonel Sanders?
I don't know.
He's dead.
Is he dead?
I think so.
Oh, yeah. Couple of them dead.
Yeah. Couple.
Mog is, I mean, Barf is dead.
Barf.
No. So, John Candy.
I was Chesso.
Dot Matrix.
I was kind of a little bit, the whole Chesso plot line like
Chisaro?
Well, they called him Chesso and then they called him Chisaro because whatever.
Well, Rom misremembered even under the semi-hypnosis that Odo attempted to put him in.
Yeah. Oh, that was okay. I wanted to mention
that was another great
scene.
That
was a weird scene. It seemed like
I love that scene.
Like, okay, I'm not going to say it was a bad scene and I'm not going to say it was unnecessary because it's all about the flavor and texture, but something about it felt a little unnecessary, but
the
that's
past,
okay.
Rom, it's like, not your future.
He's like, breathe. It's like going through
his
breathing exercises.
It was Odo's frustrations. That's what I liked. It was Odo was so frustrated that he was having to fucking dig around in fucking goddamn Rom's mind of all people.
Yeah.
He needed Rom to help him, and he clearly doesn't really respect Rom, certainly not at this point.
You know what Rom needs?
Companionship. Companionship. Companionship.
That's a nice way of saying it.
Companionship. 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 Companionship.
That's what Rom needs.
And he'll find it one day.
That's a nice way of saying it.
In the arms of Rita. What I mean is, you miss her companionship. Companionship.
Makaboo bread, no crumbs.
Companionship. Companionship.
Makaboo bread?
Makaboo bread.
What are you talking about?
That's another thing that Jake says.
Is Jake, does Jake say that?
Come on, man.
Dan's doing some weird,
doing that thing.
Weird thing while he's trying to look up the sound effect.
Look up what sound effect?
I don't know. It's part of the charm of the podcast, Dan. It's part of the charm of the podcast. People get a peek behind
Star
the scenes.
Wait, you mean this?
Rock the Gino. Extra sweet. Makaboo bread, no crust. Makaboo bread, no crust.
Yes. Yes, we know it very well.
I want to get some Makaboo bread.
I want some Makaboo
bread.
But
with the crust.
Yeah, Patrick doesn't like it when you say Makaboo bread.
I like it with the crust. No, I get no. I don't like it with... I don't know.
I like crust. I'm a crust man.
Okay, you did not enjoy that scene, or the chess.
I didn't unenjoy that scene. I thought it was fine. It was good. I don't have a problem with it. It just was funny. It felt like Like I said, it's fine. It's good. I don't have any complaints.
I loved it.
No. It was the best.
No, it's good. It offered texture and flavor, and it's memorable. It's just kind of funny that they
flavor
thought,
all up in your
it's,
face.
It's, thank you. It's just funny that they thought to put it. It's just they thought it was funny. They thought to put a scene like that in there. That's all. That's all I mean. It's no problems. No problems.
It was cinematic umami.
There you go. Chisaro, though, like, I was confused because he was supposed to be helping war orphans, but somehow he was implicated. I didn't really pay close enough attention to that.
He was
part.
A rich guy who was donating to war orphans. Well,
yes, right.
But we're given to understand that during the war, he gained his riches in part by being
orphans.
A collaborator.
Oh, great, yes. Right, yeah.
So him donating to orphans is just like...
Was he laundering money?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just the James Bond villain style, like, you know, he opens a kindergarten, but like he's also like murdering people. Or, you know. Classic story.
Yeah, classic story.
The sabotage. I'll be executed for the sabotage. Who cares about Bajorans sabotage. Killing Bajorans when you can hang a rebel? I came here to commit acts of sabotage against the Cardassians. Last night I succeeded. A colleague of mine was given the job of sabotaging the ore processor. The sabotage.
Sabotage.
Yeah. Sabotage.
I'm not joking, Lee.
These first two sound effects are funny because there's a period in the middle that she doesn't respect. In this, listen for it here.
All right.
I'll be executed for the sabotage. Who cares about sabotage. Bajorans killing Bajorans when you can hang a rebel?
Something the sabotage, who cares? She goes, something sabotage, who cares? There's a period in there, and it happens here too.
I came here to commit acts of sabotage against the Cardassians. Last night I succeeded.
Last night I succeeded.
Yeah.
It's just interesting. There's two lines where she just has no respect for a period. For
that's
a period.
Interesting way to characterize it, but yeah. I can't disagree.
Cannot. Can you? There was a rule of acquisition.
Wives serve, brothers inherit. Mm-hmm. Rule of acquisition number 139, if I'm not mistaken.
What do you think of that rule, Jesse?
I'm down with that one.
I don't know if that was the right response.
Okay. It's especially perplexing.
Don't you touch anything.
It's especially
ever again.
It's especially perplexing because Jesse, like me, doesn't have any brothers. Jesse and I only have sisters, whereas Dan has brothers.
I just have one sister.
So Dan having brothers, I don't. It's a different question.
Yeah.
So okay.
Right, Jesse, you've got two.
Am I being asked the question?
Well, no, I'm saying that's why I asked Jesse specifically because it was interesting to me.
Yeah.
The idea of what somebody would think of this, not only who is a presumably modern progressive thinking person, but also somebody who does not have brothers. But okay,
I think it's funny how like it wasn't even like Quark was jokingly like, I sure hope he dies so I get the bar. Like,
you mean Rom?
I'm sorry, I said Quark. How Rom said, like, wasn't even like jokingly being like, well, I hope he dies so I get the bar. Like, he was bummed out when he found out that, like, that Quark wasn't dead. In fact, he was all going like,
you're a hero, Rom. You saved your brother's life.
And it's funny, you notice after he did that, like, Quark was smiling at his brother's pain. His brother was in pain.
Beautiful.
So Rom really wanted his brother dead, and then Quark was laughing because his brother was bummed out. Like, Ferengis are fucked up.
Well, and what's great is, again,
they come from a mud planet.
Unlike Vulcans that come from a fire planet or a lava planet.
With nothing on it.
What's a desert planet?
Well, it's all fiery looking.
Deep Space Nine.
It's fiery looking. Do you disagree?
It's got nothing on it.
It's got fire looks. It's got molten lava. It's got lava. It's got lava. Maybe I had some lava.
What kind of planet is that?
Maybe I had some lava.
There's this week's Pulp Fiction reference. you can win money if you... we'll have a contest if you can pick out all the Pulp Fiction references.
Let me do it.
No. It's just that they do such a good job with building these characters... Look, Star Trek is good at this in general, but I think Deep Space Nine in particular, characterizing these aliens as truly alien, not just sort of funny variations on human behavior, but the Ferengi with their cutthroat. They really are like that. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's fun when they get to portray that, including having Rom, who, you know, is sort of a pushover, you know, he loves his brother, but is also like totally into the idea of getting to take over the bar.
It's in, speaking of like how different alien species think differently, like back at the part where Odo was complaining about having to keep the log, he was like, these humans like to keep so many logs, they try to store them microscopically.
Or they have to store them microscopically.
They have to store and like
isolinear rods.
And it's funny because like to me, I'm just like, well, yeah, don't you want to store history and information? Right. That just makes sense. But like, not everybody's like that, I guess.
No, that is a absolutely. Yeah. That is a.
Odo has a memory, and then everybody connects in the.
Oh yeah, that's right. They just
the big goo pool.
Yeah, see, we can't
aspect of culture.
See, Odo should be more sensitive because we can't connect in the goo pool, so we can't. So we have to do something.
Know about it.
He doesn't know about it at this stage.
But he's still got, you know.
Unless he has some vague.
He's got some instinct. He's got an instinct.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because that's why he feels so alone. That's one of the things that accentuates his loneliness. It's not just that he's different and therefore excluded, excluded by the people around him. But in addition to that, he recognizes the loss of the link inherently. Although, yes, they probably would not have known that about the character at this stage in the television program's progress.
A question to you guys about differences. There's this line Odo says, "If you know as much about me as you say you do, Gul Dukat, you know I don't lie. I am convinced that she did not kill Vatrick."
Yeah.
Who lies less, Odo or Vulcans or Starfleet?
Odo did not lie in that case.
But I'm saying, in general, who lies less? Odo?
Maybe Odo.
Odo, Vulcans, or Starfleet?
Definitely Odo.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to go with Odo.
On average?
On average, all together.
So you say...
And Dan's referring to a common thread on this podcast and other Star Trek conversations about how the fact that there's Vulcans have this stereotype that they can't lie.
It's not a stereotype. They say that.
Well, they support that stereotype. They lean into that stereotype.
They say that.
They rely on that stereotype, straight up say, as a Vulcan, I
cannot lie. But they say that.
Yeah,
it's not just
a
stereotype.
That's a lie.
But
that's what's so funny about it.
But I'm just saying it's not a stereotype because it's what they say.
They're lying to themselves.
I think it's a social construction.
But they assert it themselves. It's not usually a stereotype is asserted by someone from the outside.
You can define it different ways, but I'm happy to say whatever you want to call it, it's a socially constructed
reality. If I say I like to jump off the high dive at the pool, that's not a stereotype. It's something I'm telling you about myself. Now, whether or not it's true is different.
Yes, I'm saying it's not a fact. We know Vulcans lying. It's something that people just believe about them.
Starfleet, of course, is coming from this one.
I'm with Starfleet. We don't lie.
There's that too,
which is from last week's Justice.
Yeah. So who lies less, Vulcans or Starfleet? On average,
Starfleet. Yeah.
So you'd say Vulcans lie more than Starfleet and Odo?
I think most Starfleet officers and enlisted people are largely
I don't know, man. I mean, I would believe that Vulcans lie less than Starfleet. Starfleet's full of a bunch of humans.
I think Vulcans they can't go more than one paragraph without lying. I think they're just constantly bullshitting.
Part of their whole thing.
I think they fucking get off on that. You know why they only
Patrick has jumped the shark. No.
The Vulcans only have to go into Ponfar once every 7 years because they're satisfied the rest of the time just getting off on fucking lying to people.
I'm not joking,
to,
Lee.
Lying to their fucking faces, and every time they do, they're just like, yeah.
Okay, I see what you're
fucking,
doing.
Fucking lie to that fucking human, that stinky-ass fucking stinky human. Stinky-ass
red blood.
Did you notice that? Did you notice that when Odo turned down that drink that Quark was offering, he had a soft drink on the ready?
Yeah.
Like, and it also, and it had a frilly thingy-bingy on top, almost like he was making fun of him.
Quark was workshopping that gag.
Yeah, I know.
The previous week, and he was like, ah, I can pull it on this dude.
Yeah, he's like, oh,
this guy hasn't been in here yet.
Here's a little frilly thing for you, too.
He's like, a funny guy.
Like, I've tried this gag on every other motherfucker who comes in this bar, and finally a new guy comes
now
in.
Now I can make him feel stupid. Oh, there is a duty or no duty.
Oh, that's exciting.
Isn't that exciting?
Would you like to do it now?
Sure.
Let's do it.
Okay, duty or no duty.
Now or not now.
Duty or no duty, it's this the song we're playing.
Oh, yeah.
Duty or no duty, this is the song we're playing, yeah, yeah.
I don't have the theme song loaded.
It's okay, we don't have to play it.
Yeah, it's a long theme song.
It's good enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, duty or no duty?
Uh-huh. I'll need the communication records for the Vatric home for the past 52 hours and have the central bank keep a supervisor on duty all night. I'll need several bank records as well. Duty all night. Duty all night. Duty all night. Duty all night. Duty all night.
I'm going to defer to Jesse, but it's very clear to me. It's super clear.
No duty.
I'm going to have to go no duty on that as well.
No duty.
No duty. Very it's clearly. Unanimous. Yeah, easily.
Very,
no duty.
He says it very
duty
clear.
All night. Duty 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 all night.
He's usually very all night. Clear about his duty.
Duty all night. Duty all night. Duty all night.
As a reminder,
and without a whole lot
we don't
of duty.
Need, we don't need to explain to them the rules anymore. They just have to figure it out through context. Please.
No, I think we just have to explain.
No, they can figure it out. If they've never heard the game, they can figure out what duty or no duty.
Odo doesn't duty around.
Let me at least say.
Wow, you really can't stand it, can you?
No, we won't. Okay.
This is driving you crazy.
No, it's fine.
No, you can explain it. It's fine. I just think it's humorous that it's driving you crazy.
I'm fine with your suggestion.
No, it's fine. I don't care.
We don't provide the detailed instructions or description of the duty or no duty game.
Everybody already
but
knows.
But at least let me emphasize that the game is called
Everybody.
Duty or No Duty.
Duty.
It is not duty or no duty.
Well, you just gave it away.
No, I'm just saying that's all the information you need to know. It's duty,
Chief O'Brien.
Duty or no duty. Okay. And that
where
was it,
would
right?
I stay?
It was just the one duty or no duty?
It was just the one.
Interesting.
Well,
there was not somebody talking about getting off duty? No, probably not.
Is that some sort of sexual reference?
Indeed.
I
wondered myself.
That was a good duty or no duty.
Oh.
Quite good.
Now, what did you think? We touched briefly on it, but
wasn't
the whole...
the best.
The line before Dukat and Quark were laughing at Odo was Quark goes, listen, I feel you and I, we've gotten off to a bad start here. Let me make it up to you. You need anything? A little ginger tea? No, you don't drink. Chocolate? Maybe companionship?
Companionship?
And that's when they started, Dukat was like, Quark was like, it just seems so unnecessary.
That laughing
was just so excessive.
They were just laughing at Odo.
Fucking,
just like,
yeah, I know.
Like, you little worm.
Yeah, I know.
He's a little wime.
This guy is
he's a
bug.
Squishy little wime.
Oh, no, he's doing the wime.
He's
voice.
Got the wime.
I don't need that companion.
He gets all gooed up and gets in your face.
I'm my own
goes
best
into
friend.
His bucket.
He goes into your face after he hangs out in his bucket. He comes out your face. He's a wime. He's a wine.
I forgot that Dan recently introduced to the traditional worm voice
lore.
Lore, yeah. You introduced this whole worm face and worms
worm
coming
face.
Out of the face, which is not.
I'm Odo, and I can turn into a worm because I'm a shapeshifter, and I come out my bucket and out your face.
Yeah.
I'm a worm.
So okay. What I was getting at
companionship
a moment ago was that we touched briefly on it, but didn't really get fully into it about Kira's.
Is that some sort of sexual reference?
About Kira's betrayal, for lack of a better term. Maybe that's not the right word, but she lied to Odo, right? Now,
she lied good.
But yes, but for very good reasons, but then we have to consider how does that impact
your lying?
Their relationship. And it was interesting to see this scene at the very end of the episode where they're having this conversation where Odo has revealed to Kira that he now understands that she did kill the Vatric fella, right? And Kira explains that she tried to tell him, but she kind of felt, he's gonna fuck shit up because I like lied to him for this whole time and I didn't tell him. It's an awkward thing. It's one of those awkward things. It's a relatable experience where you can get why Kira wouldn't mention it. You can get why Oda would be pissed that she didn't mention it because it prevented him from resolving a case that Kira by now knows how that itches Odo. It itches him all inside. His full gloopy body is just...
He's like an inner itch.
He needs to take some fucking Benadryl or some shit because he's itchy all over.
Slide all over some sandpaper.
Because he has an open, unsolved mystery. Velcro. And that aggravates Odo.
Will you ever be able to trust me in the same way again?
It is like sandpaper. And Kira could have solved this for Odo at least for the last year, right? In that she's been working with Odo back on the station in a different capacity. But at the same time, what was super cool about that is when she asks Odo point blank, she's like, is this going to affect our relationship, basically? And they end the episode with him looking at her and the whole kind of sad.
Yeah, I mean, that's the last line of the thing.
Yeah, it's a great line. It's a gray ending for a gray story where all the characters are... gray area characters. It's the epitome of Deep Space Nine in that sense. Another reason why I love this episode. But what I saw in Rene Aubergenois' performance of Odo reacting to Kira was that he was, on the one hand, disappointed in her and frustrated and sad that she didn't tell him. On the other hand, I think he was delighted that she cared for their relationship so much that she didn't tell him.
Yeah.
That the reason she didn't tell him, and he believes her, the reason she didn't tell him was because she was worried that it would impact
the relationship. And when she says, well, will you ever be able to trust me again? She sounded really upset. So, you know, that's, you know.
I think he was over the moon at that point.
Yeah.
Mixed with the sadness of kind of not realizing what Kira had gotten involved with those many years ago.
Oh, that one part when he, because Odo is pretty smooth throughout this episode, you know, being
not
like,
just his face, right?
Yeah, not just his face.
Or his butt.
Was that technically a callback? Or was
me repeating a joke in case people didn't catch it the first time? You know, or maybe somebody's listening to this on some weird live service and they've just tuned in halfway through.
Are we being broadcast without our knowledge?
You know, until you just said that, I hadn't considered it. Now I'm a little nervous.
What if there's somebody listening to it and somebody else walks into the room?
What
if there's Wi-Fi chips in everything? There's like nano Wi-Fi chips in our wall paint. So Odo is being like confident and detective and super awesome and like, oh, I'm super smart, you weren't crying, and you're this and you're that. And then he got ahead of himself. He got too confident when he sat down with Kira at that one point and goes, a pretty girl like you shouldn't be eating alone. You know, that was the part where she's like,
creepy thing to say.
Yeah, it was a really creepy thing, but he almost
kicked him in the balls.
He was high on himself being like, I'm so good at this that he said something like that. And it was like, that doesn't work coming out of your mouth, Odo. And not to Kira of all people. Yeah. And she was basically like, yeah, don't say that or I'll kick you in the butthole. Yeah. Yeah.
She had like long hair and was like in a ponytail. It was funny.
Yeah, it was interesting.
It's hilarious.
I mean, it was hilarious.
It was weird.
It was also kind of cool.
It was cool.
No, it was cool, but you always see her with relatively shorter hair.
Mm-hmm. So the flashbacks, the mirror stuff, when the characters get to play different versions of themselves, it's always fun. But what's not so fun is jibber jabbering on forever. So we have to conclude our discussion.
We do, but that's
necessary evil.
That's a necessary evil.
That's a necessary evil.
What about that weird? Okay, as Chakotea describes it,
Chakotea.net?
Yes. Who do you think they mean when they say the Muscle Man? There's a character they refer to as the Muscle Man.
The Muscle Man.
They call him the Muscle Man.
Is it the bad guy, like the assassin guy or whatever?
Yeah, who appears at the beginning of the episode, like after Quark leaves the room. Yes, yeah, that guy. They refer to him as the Muscle Man.
Why would they call him the Muscle Man?
I don't know, because maybe...
He seemed like a fairly diminutive fella.
Well,
he was able to judo Ram and...
Yeah, they have... They use English spelling, so like Favor is V-O-U-R.
You mean UK spelling?
UK spelling, yeah, that kind of English.
So they call the trunk the boot?
So they maybe Muscle Man is just something they say in the UK more than to refer to an assassin or a goon. He's a goon. Instead of a goon, you call him a Muscle Man.
Could be that he's.
Or maybe they mean those little pink muscle men. You remember those little pink wrestler action figures, the Muscle Man?
I do remember those. It's probably not that. It's probably what you said earlier. That yes, this is a British or UK
There was a one guy that was just blocks. He was made out of
blocks. Yeah, I had that guy. He was block hands and a block head.
I had that as well.
Yeah, I love those things.
I'm a part of the group because I had that as well.
Yeah, you are a part of the group. You belong finally. I thought that that muscle man was kind of it was there to like, I guess, do some plot things that had to happen, but I just expected him to play more of a role somehow, and it seemed like he only appeared every once in a while to like be like, okay, let's move this plot along a little bit, you know.
Yeah, so, I always gotta have henchmen.
Yeah, but yeah. I just would like to have seen him hench a little more, you know. That's all.
Inferior henchmen.
It's not a problem. I didn't really care that I missed him. I'm just saying I expected more from him.
Yeah. Well, so that's going to do it for us this week. We hope
you know,
you
we've been ending these
that.
Episodes earlier and earlier. We used to go on to like 1:30.
We're trying to keep it.
I start the episodes and then they end at the right time because of things like this.
No. For the longest time, we would end between 1:32 and 1:35. And now recently, you've been getting more strict about ending at an hour 30.
I'm always trying to target an hour 30. And frankly, even shorter if I could manage.
But like
it.
In the past, like I've seen, it wasn't uncommon for us to go to like 1:34. And it wasn't just my fault. Like in the past, I'm just saying, I think more recently you've been becoming a little bit more stringent about it.
All right. That's a good observation.
So I just think that you should make it more aware to the rest of us that when you decide to be more stringent about these things, because this is our podcast, not your podcast. Yes.
With that observation.
You have nothing to say to that.
I do, but we don't have time, so we can talk about it next week.
You're making it your podcast again.
With that observation, we have to conclude this week's conversation, but next week, ooh, it's all lined up already. Next week, we're excited. I don't know how excited we are.
You know, like when we started this podcast, I offered to help you edit it, and you said no.
Okay. Next week, we'll be talking about catwalk from Enterprise.
I'm just saying
Enterprise is the catwalk.
I'm just saying that when you say like, I'm the one who edits it, so I get to make these decisions, remember that I offered.
You'll start editing it next week.
By now, I already have a different role now.
When we discuss the catwalk from
I'm just saying
Enterprise's
these decisions should be made by all of us,
second
you.
Second season.
These decisions should be made by all of us. This is ridiculous. He won't even talk about it. Why won't he even talk about it?
itsgotstartrek.com.
Tyranny.
It's
Got Star Trek.
There's nowhere in the editing podcast that says you decide how long the podcast is. These are decisions that we should all agree on.
It's because I'm going camping for 3 days and I have a very limited time to edit this tomorrow morning.
He's got
to...
See, you could pass that information along, and it would.
We're recording on a Thursday.
I mean, I'm all about like doing what's easier for you. I just communicate it. That's all I'm asking.
And he won't even agree to that. Scott Star Trek YouTube.
It's ridiculous.
YouTube, subscribe to us there. That'd be awesome. And we look forward. We look forward to talking to you again next week. Bye bye.
Oh, there was one other thing. End log. Now. What do you see?
The bar.
Yes.
With my name on it.
The past, Rom, not the future. The box opens. There's a piece of paper inside it.
Yes. Yes, I see it.
Quark unfolds it.
Uh-huh.
There's a list of names, Bajoran names.
Right.
The one at the very top catches your eye. And the first letter is...
C. It's a C.
And the next letter is? Skip to the last letter in the name, Rom.
Oh, it's an O.
Starts with a C, ends with an O.
And there's a mark in the name.
An apostrophe.
Chesso.
You're sure?
Yes. Maybe.
Maybe.
It's something like Chesso. I think.